patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
It is Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon kind of day. It is snowing and cold and shitty here in Calgary, Alberta. How's it looking in the province's capital there in Edmonton? It's about the same.
Edmonton the capital of Alberta?
Sure is, pal.
Really? I'm in the capital city? That's awesome. Wow, I can look down on you now.
Well, wow. at least I can feel confident that I know more in Calgary, knowing you're the capital there in Edmonton.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. You know more.
I wonder how many Edmontonians don't know they are in the capital city. I would love to think that you're in the minority here.
You know how many... I'm not even going to say anything rude.
We're going to get so many comments calling us idiots right now.
Yeah. I mean, I would say most people in Alberta aren't from Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the capital of every province? That's got to be like sixth grade geography.
What is the capital of BC, Adam?
Victoria. Not Vancouver.
No, it's not.
See, there's a weird thing in
provinces
Canada.
Love doing that little misdirect,
like,
right?
Oh, you think Saskatoon is the biggest city in Saskatchewan?
Wrong.
Well, we're going to make Regina
is the capital. Yeah. The only one that really got it right is Manitoba. They're like, Winnipeg is everything.
Well, that's the only city they have. So,
Brandon is very upset right now.
Ooh, Brandon. Yeah,
with
swift current.
With city status. Brandon Manitoba with city status getting no love here on the walk-off, but
here. Wow. Interesting. Okay. Interesting stuff. Welcome to how the provinces got their shapes here on the walk-off. Historical look, a deep dive at, anyways.
It's just great to have our riveting intros back to where we were before I left, buddy.
You know what? I wasn't able to weed out any of the casual fans. With Joel and Craig and Garth. So it's nice to have you back. And we can
Magic is back. Yeah.
Magic is
Hello,
back.
Everybody. Welcome we
make,
to Walk Off.
We make our audience disappear. The magic is back.
I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. It is mailbag day. We do have plenty of comments to get through. And this is one thing we do every single week here, is that we comb through all of your comments on YouTube. Of course, you can always DM us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. We've got our Discord up and going. Now, we did have some tomfoolery in the Discord, so it's not as easily readily available as it was. However, if you would like to join the Discord, that's completely cool. We can do that for you. Either DM our Insta or Twitter, and we'll send you a link. And then you're in.
Okay. Like, basically, what it was before, it was open access. The link was out there. It was an open door policy, and then we had some buffoons come in.
Some riffraff, if you will.
Some riffraff we had to deal with. It's been dealt with. So now it's basically still an open door policy. It's like you go to the secret nightclub, you knock on the door, you got to say the password to get in. It's that, except that our bouncer is telling you the password once you're knocking at the door.
Exactly. As if that wasn't a good enough analogy, I've got one here. Okay. It's like when you go to your friend's place when you were a kid, right? And you used to just, you'd knock on the door and the friend would run right out, but then something happened. He misbehaved. And now you got to talk to his mom and be like, hey, Mrs. Patterson, can Ryan come out?
That's weird that you went with Patterson as a last name, because that was the one I was thinking of. Chad and Casey Patterson. Wow. Okay. Shout out to Chad and Casey Patterson, Chase BC.
Anyways, we just took 2 minutes to explain the Discord is open and all you got to do is just message us if you'd like to talk Blue Jays. It's always happening in the Discord. Honestly, a big shout out to our Patreon as well. We appreciate all of you. And we do have several comments from you. Nice thing with Patreon is that you do get your comments read if you've got a question for our guests. We've worked really hard at trying to let everyone know our upcoming guests and give everyone the opportunity to get questions in. And obviously we take questions from all of our platforms. However, of course, a little bit of a leg up to those who are pitching it on Patreon. So we do appreciate that. That is the patreon.com/thewalkoff if that is something you would like to be involved in. All right, I think we're good. I'll do a quick tease here for Haggy D, Hagen Danner, his interview. We're going to be releasing that tomorrow. He is likely to contribute to this 2023 bullpen for the Toronto Blue Jays at some point, maybe earlier than later, but great interview with him. We also have Jesse Litch, former Blue Jay in the roughest times as a Blue Jays fan, those early 2010s. So he's going to be joining us next week sometime. And we've got a pile of interviews in the books here. So we are going to be releasing interviews over the next couple of weeks, pretty heavily, I would say. And on that note, we'll get to your comments here.
All right. Let's just address the elephant in the room right off the hop here. So many comments about Scott's sound yesterday. I think it was magnified by the guest we had on. Arden's welling, very soft-spoken.
I blame Arden as well. This is
mostly
totally
his
on
fault.
Arden's shoulders,
really,
yes.
Yeah. We'll make sure we clip this and send it to him or tag him in it on Twitter or whatever. Very soft-spoken, gentle giant, Arden's welling. Love him. But when you combine that with Scott's audio being a little bit off, it's an issue. So
long story short,
there.
My apologies, everybody. I'm aware that I am a loud buffoon at times, and it definitely is nice when my microphone is dampening those highs or hiring those lows. But yesterday, my wife spent a bunch of time over the weekend because she went to school for sound engineering. So she's got a background in this, and she did so much work to try and make my sound better. But of course, if I don't go into the settings and put the microphone, this beautiful Shure microphone, if I don't put it as the microphone, then it just runs through the computer microphone, which is exactly what happened. So, you know, this whole episode has not helped anyone watching think that we're smarter, especially not myself.
No.
So
no, it's funny because I would say 90% of our show upgrades come through donation and support, whether it's from our Patreon or from other people,
which is truly appreciated. Yeah.
With their very generous donations for us to upgrade our sets. And there's always that one chink in the armor that we miss. So
our brains
is the big chink in the armor. Oh, good that old is self-deprecating shots tonight. Hey,
all right.
Okay. Anyways, lots of comments there. We are aware of it. We're working on it. Apologies. Let's get into the real comments for today.
The meat, if you will.
Okay. First one comes from at Blue Jays. It looked like at Blue Jays Flyer. I think it's at Blue Jays Lifer, but it's Lifer with a Y.
Okay.
Blue Jays Leafer. Maybe it's Leafer. I'm going to start this right again for the clips. All right, first one comes in from at Blue Jays Lifer on Twitter, DM'd us and said, "Hey boys, great stuff with Arden yesterday. Scott, your sound is way way off, man."
So let's just get right into it.
You guys never mentioned what you thought of the batting order could be this year. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I love this. I love this question.
I know we
talked about it a little bit off the top, just that. And I know we're going to get comments, and feel free to let us know what you think, everybody. Obviously, there's a lot of different takes you can have on this. So personally, I don't think the batting order is going to make a huge difference. What I do hope out of the batting order this year is that it's a little bit more flexible than we saw last year. I'd like to see when there are troubles or downfalls, maybe a little bit of lineup manipulation is in order. I'd like to see the stats be kind of combed over, which obviously they're going to do, and try and maximize your run output by what players you're putting where. So in the perfect world, so here's the thing with this batting order. I'm going to be very honest up front. I hate Springer in the leadoff spot. I haven't liked him there for a long time. I know that statistically he's one of the best leadoff hitters baseball has seen in the last 10 years. And to kind of steal a strut of Arden Zwelling's, this is a terrible analogy.
You're really painting yourself into a pickle.
Myself into a corner here, but just to take a feather out of Arden Zwelling's hat. All right. When we were talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a listener asked him if next year when Chapman's gone, if there's any consideration in moving Vladdy from first to third. And Arden's response was basically, you might be able to do that, but he's got a gold glove at first base. Everything has worked out so well with him at first. Why change what works? So I do understand that with Springer. I just know how many leadoff home runs he hits, and damn, it would be nice to see those home runs come with someone on base. But we all know Springer is going to be this team's leadoff hitter as long as he's healthy. So let's go Springer in the leadoff. From there, I would like to see Vlad hitting second. Why? I know Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s numbers are much better hitting third. They just are. And for whatever reason that is, it's how the splits have worked out. And they're even a fairly substantial amount of plate appearances to back it up. The sample size isn't tiny. He is a 900 OPS hitter in the third spot and just under 800 in the second spot. But I like Vlad in the two hole for a couple of reasons. Number one, they finally went out and got those lefty bats that we've been waiting for. Good lefty bats in Dalton Varsho and Brandon Belt. And that is who I would like to see hitting third. I actually don't even care who it is. I would experiment a little with that and see what works, what sticks. But I would love to see Dalton Varsho. Let's go with Varsho in number three. I like Bo in the cleanup spot. I wouldn't move him. I like Bo at four. I like Belt at five. By the way, this is for a right-handed hitting pitcher or a right-handed throwing pitcher. Sorry, buddy.
No, I'm just going to sigh and I'm going to bite my tongue till my turn. Go ahead.
Yeah. So then I would go Kirk in the sixth spot. Chapman 7, Merrifield 8, Kiermaier 9, something like that. For left-handed hitters, I'd do Springer leadoff again, and then Vlad, Kirk, Bo, Espinal, Jano, Chapman, Merrifield, Lopez. I don't know. Like, you know, throw out all the righties, obviously. No? Okay.
No, this is why I hate this question, is it's like looking at pictures of someone else's kids.
Yeah.
Like it puts me right to sleep. Okay. I don't know if your wife does this or not. My wife loves showing me like TikToks and Instagram reels of TikToks, because that's a thing, mm-hmm. of like funny stuff kids are doing, like babies of like kids that we don't know who any of these people are. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I have a biological daughter that we share. She's a great stepmom, but she doesn't have a biological daughter of her own. She never went through that like 0 through 4 age. So I've like seen all that shit with my own kid.
Yeah.
So like seeing someone else do shenanigans, I'm just like, I don't care. So it's so bad. I don't care. And that's like the biggest reason I want to have another kid with her, is just so she'll stop showing me TikToks of cute random kids that mean nothing to me. So I hope she doesn't see this clip. With that in mind, batting order is the same thing, where it's like everyone's got a strong opinion. You said it yourself. This is the order for right-handed hitters. This is the order for left-handed pitchers. Well, it's going to be different if Alec Manoah's pitching, because then Alejandro Kirk is for sure our catcher versus Danny Jansen versus, there's just so many variables. And we talked about this before we went on. It's like the splits, the statistics and the data on versus lefties versus righties is like so much more than just that too. Now there's like, well, this guy hits, he hits well against hard throwing lefties, but not lefties with movement, or he can't touch a curveball, but he's great against the slider. So depending on the matchups, and there's just, when we talked to Arden yesterday and we asked him about the fifth starting pitcher, he kind of, I couldn't put my finger on why I don't like talking batting order until he said this, but he's like, it's basically who pitches game five of the season. And then after that, it's going to be a case by case, day by day situation for who, you know, who is quote unquote the fifth starter on this team. Mm-hmm. And that's like the batting order. It's like, what are we going to get opening day? And then beyond that, there's
it's
just
a countdown to playoffs.
So
like things. Beyond that, it's a countdown to playoffs, and you're just like, trying to find out what works for them.
Yeah, it's, you know, like we have the question, or we have the variables at catcher, right? We have Kirk and Jansen going to be pretty close to a 50-50 split, maybe 60-40, mm-hmm. either direction. I wouldn't be surprised based on bad tacos and performance and all the rest, right? Second base, we got Espinal, we got Merrifield, we got Kevin Biggio. I don't know who's going to get playing time. I think it's going to be a hot hand situation.
Yeah.
Right. Outfield. I don't know who the fourth outfielder is. It's going to be someone who used to play second base regularly, probably. And then you're going to have bad
Santiago.
Tacos on top of that. Springer. Hope him good health this year. Kiermaier. Hope him good health this year. These guys do have a lot of ink on their medical records, if you know what I mean. Right. When Springer's not in the lineup, it's a totally different lineup because you need someone else in the leadoff spot. So that changes everything. There's just such a trickle down effect. It exhausts me. So I don't like doing these sorts of homework assignments, but I did. I have two approaches for the batting lineup. This is just a philosophical approach. Pencil in the names however you like, but here's my two approaches to the batting lineup. Do you do a deep top, shallow bottom? So with this strategy, you're putting your best players at the top. And then the second half of the lineup, you're just hoping that those good guys got on base and you're having your best hopes at bringing them home before you run out of outs in the inning, right? So in this situation, again, probably George Springer leading off, even though we don't like it, blah, blah, blah. It is what it is. I'm just going with Bo at two, Vlad at three. So I'm nothing sexy changes here.
Yeah.
Then I got Brandon Belt at four. He's our cleanup hitter. He's left-handed, mix up the order, all that stuff. Then we got Chapman, because I think Chapman is our next best hitter on the team. So he is our next best chance to get those guys in, followed by Varsho, followed by Jansen. And then we got Merrifield and Kiermaier at the bottom, because I think those are our weakest hitters of our everyday players. Can we agree on that? So that's one approach. The other approach, and I like this one better, and again, mix and match these names with whoever's healthy and based on pitching
who's
matchups and
when.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Sure. But we do two mini lineups within the batting order. We do a 1-4 approach, and then we do a 5-8 approach as a second version, a B team of 1-4. And then number nine is the pseudo leadoff. So in this situation, it would be Springer, Bo, Vlad, and Belt. So nothing has changed there. I think that's our best four. But then I bring Merrifield up to hit number five.
Which is interesting. And we could see that iteration of a lineup at some point.
So I go from Merrifield at five, Jansen or Kirk six, and then Varsho at seven as our lefty. So he's, you know, the bottom of our B team of this half, and then Chapman as the cleanup hitter of the bottom half, if you will. So I'm probably going to get some pushback on this, having Merrifield hit that high and having Chapman hit that low. And then Kiermaier would be number nine, and he's the pseudo leadoff leading into Springer. I like the idea of Merrifield and Kiermaier. Those are going to be our two like biggest speedster threats, I think, on the base paths, our biggest threats to steal. So if they can get on base, I like what they can do. The idea of having Kiermaier, I know he's not like a high on base percentage guy, but if he could get on 25% of the time even, and that's one extra at bat per game where George Springer has a speedster on base in front of him, someone aggressive who's going to be distracting the pitcher. I like that. So
I like
it. I also hate this assignment. So
yeah, no, I like what you did there. I like what you did there. It's funny because I'm not passionate about the lineup in any way, you know, like I'm just like, however they decide to do it, I'm sure it's going to be fine. And if it's not, then they're going to move it around until it is, like, or at least that better be what they're going to do. Right. So
I think both of us are probably some of the worst people to ask this question of, because I know there are. And when we do long toss, by the way, we have long toss coming up this Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So 2-hour roundtable with some of the regulars and some of the other content creators. Might get a prospect on there, might get Anthony Telford back this Sunday.
That'd be awesome.
There are people who are passionate and have very strong feelings about batting order. I don't think either of us are either of those guys. Am I speaking for you when I say that? Or
no, I'm curious. It's funny. Like I don't personally feel passionate about the way it should be lined up, but I am super curious to see how they go about doing it. And it is a very interesting wrinkle with these two big lefty capable lefty bats in Varsho and Belt, and how they use them to split up the right-handed hitters, which is, I think, something that they are going to try and do. I'm really curious to see how high a Belt or a Varsho winds up hitting, you know, like if they do crack that top three of the lineup, or if they're going to stick with the top four they had last year, which would also be completely fine. You know, like if it is Springer, Bo, Vladdy, or Kirk, you know, however they want to do it, I'm fine with it as long as it's working, right? And I think most fans are in that boat. But if you have a unique batting order in your head and you want the people to know, feel free to drop it in the comments here. That's our call to action.
That's our call to action. All right, next one comes in from Twitter as well. Trisha the Disha says, hey guys, just wanted to reach out and say how nice it is you're both back doing the podcast. The guest hosts were great and Adam was awesome holding down the fort, but you two together is my fave. Welcome back, Scott. For mailbag, if you have room for my question, could you talk Espinal? He's my favorite on the Jays and I wonder where he's going to get his playing time this season. So Santiago Espinal, full-time third baseman, right? We're trading Matt Chapman.
Yeah, this is a really good question because I think it will just work itself out. But I mean, you do look at the list of names and where does Espinal fit in here? It is an interesting question. Are we going to see him get some time in the outfield? There is a question mark for that fourth outfield spot currently being held. I know Arden Zwelling yesterday was like, he basically said it's safe to say Merrifield and Biggio are who they're planning on kind of holding down that spot in the lineup, that fourth outfield spot. We know that Bad Tacos has been a thorn in both Kiermaier and Springer's craw over the years here, especially the last couple years in particular. Does Espinal slot in and play some left field here and there? Obviously, he's a natural second baseman. He does have a little bit of time at shortstop. I mean, Bo last year, I think, played 159 games. So it's not like there's a ton of off time where he can relieve Bo. Bichette seems to be a guy who likes to be out there playing 100% of the time that he's available. Could he see some time at third base? I think Espinal is going to play far more positions this year, more regularly than last year, where he basically was our everyday second baseman. And I don't think that's going to be the case this year. Where do you see Espinal slotting in, man?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, when we talked to Jeff Blair, he had the insight of speaking to Dalton Varsho, who referred to Whit Merrifield as the Blue Jays second baseman. Now, that could be because he wasn't too familiar with his teammates. Like, or how much are we reading into the tea leaves of what the new guy is saying? You know, was he saying that because he had a meeting and that was
what
something
he
saw written on the whiteboard behind them? Or was that just because Whit Merrifield is a known commodity in MLB and is a name that Dalton Varsho was probably familiar with? No disrespect to Santiago Espinal. But Jeff Blair seemed to think that that was a real indicator that Whit Merrifield was going to be the de facto second baseman. After talking with Arden, Arden's not so sure, and I think this illustrates the fact that none of us fucking know.
Yeah,
we don't know. We don't know what's going on. I would say if we look at Raimel Tapia's games played last year as our fourth outfielder.
130 or something, right?
128. Let's just call it 130. There was only 30 games in which we didn't see him used.
The hot 30, I called them.
The hot 30, yeah. The hot 30. you know, got to give that Tapia a day off every once in a while. Moving Springer to right field, I guess, should mean he plays more, right?
Knocking on wood, yeah.
Kevin Kiermaier, I would say, not likely to be in the lineup for more games than, say, Oscar Hernandez was, right? Like, I just don't, I guess my point is, last year Tapia got a lot of play, and it wasn't a particularly fragile outfield, right? This year, the outfield does feel more fragile. I'm hopeful that Springer in right field means he plays 140 games.
One of the big reasons why this organization went out fishing for center fielders is so that they could alleviate some of these injury snafus that Springer found himself in center field.
The only problem is that Kiermaier might miss more games at center field than Springer did last year. Now, from like an offense standpoint, that's a trade you'll make every day, right? But for a how many games does the fourth outfielder play? If we set the number at 128, which is where Raimel Tapia played last year,
so are over you comfortable, under. Adam? Are you comfortable, Adam, seeing a split of Whit Merrifield and Kevin Biggio in left field for 128 games?
Okay, so this is the question. This is, I do think that the fourth outfielder will get more than 128 games. That's my prediction.
Wow.
I think it's more fragile than last year, right? I think that's it. I also think that there are those situations where even where everyone's healthy and Dalton Varsho has a bad matchup against a left-handed pitcher, you know, Whit Merrifield's in, and it's not even a health reason, it's just because of the matchups are better. Boy, we're sure not talking a lot of Espinal for an Espinal related question.
I
feel like Espinal is probably going to play.
I mean, he's back to our utility guy, right?
He's back to our utility guy, but I would say home base for him is second. Like, that's his spot. I think he is going to be everyday second baseman. Probably not. Because, like you said, I think he'll spell Chapman at third sometimes. I think he'll maybe five games at shortstop this year, barring like bad tacos. I don't know how I feel about Espinal. Like,
he feels like the odd man out on this team, in my opinion. I'm, and by the way, I say this with the utmost respect to Santiago Espinal and what he did for this team last year. He really stepped in and played a solid second base. He made the All-Star team, especially in the first half of the year. He was a big time contributing member to this lineup when they needed him most.
I've got it. Here's what I think. This is what I think looks like at second base. Whit Merrifield starts the year as our regular second baseman. Not quite our everyday second baseman, but our essentially our second baseman.
Four out of six games.
And then I think at a certain point, I don't know when that is on the calendar, he gets pulled to the outfield for the reasons that we just talked ad nauseum, right? Which, as he gets pulled to the outfield, Espinal is just the guy that fills in at second base. And it might be from May through September, because Merrifield is playing so much outfield games, that's where Espinal fills in. Like, he's the backup second baseman who plays more second base than our second baseman, because our second baseman is playing outfield. Is that makes me uncomfortable to put it like that, but that makes the most sense to me.
So where are you at on, he turns 28 April 11th, on Kevin Biggio? Do you think Kevin Biggio can still contribute to this team, or is this an Espinal, Merrifield second base platoon, and Kevin is going to be used fairly sparingly? See, this is the other thing, man. Bad tacos in the outfield. Like, how would you feel about Dalton Varsho in center, Biggio in right field, and Merrifield
in left? I know.
In left. We are really talking worst case scenarios here. This is not a very positive portion of the episode. Yeah.
Thanks for this one, Trisha. Jeez. I mean, I don't like it. I think if that happens, a trade needs to happen quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if it is a short-term thing, if it's 1 week and there's a light at the end of the tunnel, I'm fine with it, I guess.
So here are the other options. The other options within this organization are Otto Lopez, Addison Barger, Nathan Lukes, and Spencer Horwitz. These are the four guys that are at AAA who could possibly come in and contribute to this team. However, oh man, it doesn't feel good when you start naming these options.
Okay.
To play 130 games.
I will say, on Kevin Biggio's behalf, I have more confidence in him for 2023 contributing to this team than any of those guys.
Okay.
I don't want to see Otto Lopez in right field. Like, if Kevin's healthy, he's better than... Does he have the ceiling of Addison Barger? Probably not. But is he better this season? I would say almost absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not against Addison Barger. Like,
I'm
optimistic on the kid too, but like, he doesn't have the high pedigree. Like, he just kind of just burst onto the scene, had a great year last year, and now all of a sudden there's talk like, well, is he our next Matt Chapman heir apparent? It's like, whoa,
yeah,
cool the Jets a bit. Like,
well, I think this is what would need to happen to see Barger or Horowitz or something like that happen, is they would need to come in and they would need to just dominate. They would need to start strong, alleviate some of the panic about the bad tacos some of the regulars are dealing with.
And that's a lot AAA of pressure. AAA to the MLB is such
a lot
huge
of pressure to put on a kid. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I don't know. Espinal, I would say, is not our April second baseman.
But
I would say he's probably our May through September second baseman. I know.
Anyways, move away from this little dark cloud we found ourselves under.
All right. Thanks for the question, Trisha. All right. Next question comes in from, well, not really a question, comes in from Discord. So SCTI was showing Garth some love. Garth, friend of the show. You probably recognize him from being on every Friday for the last 3 weeks. Garth is a big baseball card guy and has been using his involvement in the baseball card community to raise funds for his local ball field.
Which is so cool.
Very cool. So he had a goal of raising $1,000 for his local ball field, and he met his goal over the weekend. So he's raised $1,000. I can never say these digits, $1,045. $1,045. So Garth says, thanks to everyone who helped me get there, floored by the support, and he'll be posting renovation pics and videos once the snow F's off. So there you go. Some cool community love and involvement with Garth there.
What's cool too is Garth is from just a small community north of Sault Ste. Marie. So it's not like
center of Canada, if you ask him.
That's right. The center of Canada.
Not if you ask anyone in Manitoba, but
don't,
if you ask.
Don't tell Manitoba that. They've dealt with enough after the beginning of this episode. So anyways, very cool to see somebody go out of their way to contribute to their community ball community. So that's very cool. Too many communities there, but that's good. Tip of the hat to Garth.
All right. Next one comes in from Instagram. Dylan DM'd me and sent the link to a jaysjournal.com article. I'll link to it in the show notes here if you want to have a read. But it's basically three reasons Ricky Tiedemann won't make the team this year out of spring training. The three reasons being lack of experience, the competition, and service time manipulation. So Dylan wants our thoughts on Ricky Tiedemann not making the team. What do you think, Scott? Is Ricky Tiedemann going to make the team out of spring training?
We're the worst guys to ask this. I mean, last year, or sorry, 2021, when they were, there was all the talk of Alek Manoah being called up, both Adam and I were vehemently against it. We both hated the idea of bringing him up, and it had a lot to do with the fact that he'd only pitched about 60 innings in total in pro baseball. There was the COVID year where he was off. But I do feel very strongly when it comes to Ricky Tiedemann that there is no way he makes this team out of spring training. And it's very likely we do see Ricky at some point in 2023. I don't think that scouts within the organization have been as high on a guy in years. I think there's more optimism and hype around Ricky than there was Alek Manoah. We haven't seen this since this type of hype since Big Nate, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are some pitfalls and downfalls to rushing a guy, and I mean this with the utmost respect, but he's 19, and I'm not slagging 19-year-olds. I'm not saying that there aren't some 19-year-olds out there with the mental fortitude to take the jump from AAA to the bigs, but we were just talking about that. It is a mega jump. Okay, the difference between low A and high A is big, but it's not huge. Okay, high A to double A, big, but not huge. Same all the way up, but it is a huge gap from AAA to the majors. Ricky Tiedemann is young and he has 74 pro ball innings under his belt. Last year, he moved up all four ranks. Incredibly impressive, but there's no reason to rush him. And I think that Jay's Journal nailed it with service time manipulation, right? Because even if they wait until I think it's end of April, they get a full another year. It only makes sense. This is a front office that has proven time and time again they're all about asset management. Why are they going to jump the gun 3 weeks? Even if he has an amazing spring, they've got all the leverage in the world because it makes sense not to rush a 19-year-old. So if you're the organization, of course you're going to lean on the excuse you have, right? You don't want to make it obvious. If Ricky Tiedemann was 23, this is a different story. And I think that's very important for everyone to keep in mind who keeps using Alek Manoah as a comparable. Alek Manoah was 4 years older. That's not nothing. 4 years is a lot.
It's certainly not nothing. Also, I do think that the competition, I guess, was point number two Jay's Journal made, is a different situation that Tiedemann is facing than Alek Manoah was. The starting rotation in 2021, that was Alek Manoah's rookie season, not as good as it is this year.
No, it's not.
So we had Ryu, Ray, Mats. Remember Tanner Roark?
Yeah.
Before he got DFA'd about five games into the season.
Big Diesel.
And then Ross Stripling. And this was Ross Stripling coming off of a swingman season. He was not.
Yeah.
Approved. Like Ross. I mean, Ross Stripling now, Jays fans look back and go, wow, that was, you know, that was not the Ross Stripling that we were looking at in April of 2021.
And then
Steven Matz. So another kind of a reclamation project there. Now, Robbie Ray, yeah, he went on to win the Cy Young, but also good, not great as an option. I think we felt pretty good about our top two. And then after that was question marks. Nate Pearson is even on this list from bluebirdbanter.com, projecting the 2021 Blue Jays starting pitchers. This is from March 31st. This rotation is not, as of yet, desperate the way we were in mid-April, late April, early May.
Listen,
of 2021.
You know what I think? You know what I think, Adam, is far more likely than seeing Ricky Tiedemann is seeing Yosfer Zulueta stretched out and ready to go and not make this team out of spring training. But I think that if there is a spot to be filled in this rotation, I think Zulueta has the upper hand on Tiedemann at this point.
I think
Zulueta's so too. 24 years old. He's got more pro innings under his belt. He has dealt with a ton of obstacles in the last few years when it comes to injuries. And I just think that a 24-year-old making that jump who has already had a bunch of things to overcome is a far more attractive option in a scenario where bad tacos hurts this rotation than pushing Tiedemann, a 19-year-old with limited innings. And again, Tiedemann is going to get his chance. I know there's going to be comments here that take this as we are anti Tiedemann getting the call up. That's not the case. I just don't think there's, like, if I had to put money on it, I would put 0% chance Tiedemann makes this team out of spring training. Like, I don't even give it a 0.1%.
All right. I would give it a non-zero chance, whatever decimal point that is. If he pitches,
Ross Atkins.
what he would have to do in spring training
for them to give up a year of control. Think about that. Over 3 weeks, dude. Over 3 weeks. If they just wait till May 1st, that's a full year.
Look, if he's hitting 100 on the radar gun, if he is blowing by everyone in live at bats, if he pitches against the Yankees in spring training and just buckles Aaron Judge the way Alek Manoah did his first time against him in the big leagues, if all those things happen, it's still probably a 0% chance he makes camp with this
exactly.
team. But if, God forbid, aliens come down and abduct Kevin Gausman, Alek Manoah.
Yes.
And there's just all of a sudden two desperate holes. And we're like, we don't know where these guys went. We literally don't know. Then we probably go, we should probably use Ricky Tiedemann this year.
I really like this. My percentage is 0%. You gave it a 0.1%. And
whatever the math
are involved,
is on
aliens
alien
are involved
life
in your scenario. Yes.
Okay. This is ridiculous. But I think even beyond service time manipulation, I think just in terms of like protecting their asset, this is a kid who hasn't really like pitched above high A even yet. I know Alek Manoah didn't either, and I get that. But I wouldn't be surprised if Ricky Tiedemann starts the season in double A.
Special talent. Let him dominate. And that's the thinking with a lot of this.
So much better to
staff,
have Ricky
right?
Tiedemann dominate in double A for 2 weeks and then go, oh, okay, that was a mistake. We got to bring him up to triple A now. Then have him go against triple A hitters and struggle, even just look human against triple A hitters.
Adam, can you really quickly pull up his innings from last year, just so we can take a look. I know he got the call up to AAA at the end of September. I'm fairly certain is when it was. Ricky Tiedemann here. I just am curious how many
AAA. Did he pitch in AAA last year?
I'm fairly certain he got the call up, but let's double check that. Maybe it was just AA. But I'd love to see his
innings pitched. Ricky Tiedemann, 2022. 30 innings in Dunedin. Okay. 37 innings in Vancouver. 11 innings in New Hampshire. No innings in Buffalo.
No innings in AAA.
So he pitched 78 innings last year, 67 of which were in A ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if he started with New Hampshire. Just even just for like one start.
Just let him dominate. Let him scare some of these kids in AA and then bring them up again. AAA is filled with wily veterans. That's why AAA is such a good next step from AA, because AA tends to be where all of the true prospects are. You know, if you've got a really high ceiling, you're most likely going to get the call to AA. But AAA, there's a lot of the guys that are kind of yo-yoing up and down from the bigs, right? The guys with options, the guys with a big league experience, maybe they're trying to stick with a team, whatever it may be.
Rehab assignments.
Exactly. So AAA, you know, give Ricky a couple of games at AA, let him feel incredibly confident, and then let him go face some wily veterans. And maybe he does dominate. Maybe he does Alec Manoa this, and there's a bad taco or two. Kikuchi's struggling. Like, there are scenarios where we could see Ricky Tiedemann in June or July. But also, those scenarios scare the shit out of me, because it means that the sky is falling and it is not good news. It's like when Alec Manoa got the call up, right? Like, I think if there were better options, they wouldn't have rushed him, right?
Yeah.
There was just no other options.
And we got lucky. It worked out as well. I mean, for every Alec Manoa, there's King a Nate Alec. Pearson, right? And I kind of, that's part of the reason I'm leaning towards, like, let's just stick him down in AA, is even just to kind of slow the hype train on this kid. Mm-hmm. And I got no reason to believe that, personality is an issue with Ricky Tiedemann. So let me just get that out of the way right now. But maybe it wouldn't be bad for his development to just like humble him a little bit, or just to like, just for the way things went with Nate Pearson. We always go back to this where he was like doing those MLB Network, you know, and like Hall of Fame bust.
Yeah.
What are you going to put on your plaque when you go to the hall? Like,
to
Cooperstown. It was like, that didn't pan out so well.
Some things about AA. The average age of a AA player is 24 years old. Ricky Tiedemann is 19. He's 5 years younger than the average age. I just think it makes a lot of sense to slow our roll a little on Ricky and let him force the hand, right? And that is something that this organization.
Let me just clarify.
I'll let you finish. Yeah,
Ricky Tiedemann is 20 years old. He'll be 21 this year. So the point still rings true. He is substantially younger than everyone at AA. But I just know people are gonna rip us apart in the comments if we don't clarify. He's not 19. He's 20 and will be 21, well before the end of the year.
Right. No, that is correct. I wasn't doubting you. I just wanted to see when his birthday was, but yes.
All right.
Nonetheless, everything I say, I'm still sticking by it. One extra year doesn't do anything for me.
I mean, it does, but I'm just, this is why they pay me the big bucks, Scott, is
keeping me in line. I like it.
I do ages well. Well, this has been a terrible end to what was otherwise a pretty good segment. So let's move on from there.
Harsh judgment there.
What?
Harsh judgment on the end of that segment.
We really fizzled out there when we started talking birth years.
Yes.
Not great content. All right. some Patreon comments, and then we'll get to your upcoming comedy tour schedule, because I know a lot of people are asking for that sort of stuff. So Patreon, Bud the Spud commented, because what we've started doing is, in an effort to put out that whole birth years thing is just in the back of my head right now, just nagging at me the way that clip ended. Ugh. All right, let's start this one again. Patreon, next comment comes in from Bud the Spud. Says, awesome, watching the unedited gives a whole new appreciation for what you guys do. So just a point of clarification here, if you do listen to us on iTunes or Spotify, or you watch the clips on YouTube or the full episodes on YouTube, everything does go up immediately and unedited, so you catch all of our gaffes, all of our nonsensical story time, pre and post show, that goes up immediately. So it's currently 11 a.m. Alberta time right now. We're about to wrap. This will be up within 5 minutes of the episode being done. That's probably the best way to get all the nonsense too, because nothing gets cut out at that point. So if you're into that sort of thing, $4 a month at patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. We also have trivia night, which I got to address here because there is a scheduling conflict, which also ties into the comedy schedule. So trivia night, we're doing Moneyball this month. Last month we did Major League. Supposed to be the last Tuesday of every month was supposed to be the day. However, February 28th, which we've been advertising for the last couple weeks, the Moneyball trivia night, Scott and I are doing comedy up in Fort McMurray. So
yes,
we'll not be able to do trivia night the last Tuesday of February. So I will have a poll up on the Patreon. Please only vote if you're able to make the trivia night or have any interest in the trivia night anyways. But as an alternative, we can either do the day before Monday, February 27th, or we can do it on a Tuesday still and just push it back a week. So it'll be March 7th. So I'll put a poll up, whatever the majority votes on, that's what we'll do. Trivia night, super fun, half hour to 45 minutes, prizes. We all hop on a Zoom call. There's a free website that we run the trivia app through. All the questions that I've written, we go over. It's multiple choice stuff. It's just a fun, goofy time. So it's, yeah, come out for trivia night, but, please vote in the poll, which day works better, because the more people we can get out, the better. And that's all I got. We'll move on to comedy schedule, Scott, while we're on the topic of Fort McMurray. And
yes,
you know, you have a lot of dates coming up. So
I do. So I actually fly out tomorrow morning to Ottawa. So I am playing the Laugh Lounge Comedy Club in the Market in Ottawa. We will put the link in the show notes here. So if you would like to come out and check out a comedy show, obviously I would appreciate it. And you know what? I think that I make my living at comedy. I'm actually a better comedian than I am a baseball podcaster, let me tell you. So that should give you some relief if you're watching this, that I do know what I'm doing on stage, and it is fun. Those shows run Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then I fly back to Calgary here on the Monday, February 27th. I'm going to be at the Laugh Shop in Calgary here doing the Just for Laughs showcase. So every year, Just for Laughs gets the best comics in every community or bigger city, I guess, that has a comedy community going. And
shots fired to Brandon Manitoba.
That's right. Brandon Manitoba taking it rough today. Yeah.
No Just for Laughs showcase for Brandon Manitoba.
So if you wanted to come out and honestly see just some really good Calgary comics, this would be the time to do it. Of course, I am on that list. I'll have the link for those tickets in the show notes. And then if you're listening in Fort McMurray, Alberta, you get to see the whole walk-off experience. Adam and I are going to be playing the casino next Tuesday in Fort Max. So there you go. It would be awesome if you came out to a show. You can, if you're wondering what the heck my comedy is like, I've got my album Staying Together for the Cat on Spotify, Google, Apple. Feel free to check that out. But yeah, it'd be great to see some of you folks out. And that's my schedule.
All right. That's where we'll end it then, Scott. Nice seeing you. We got Haggy Danner interview tomorrow.
Yes. Haggy D tomorrow. Thank you very much to everyone who has sat through this whole thing. Feel free, if you haven't yet, hit subscribe and like. For the audio listeners out there, just a tip of the hat, because we have continued to see growth on the audio side of things. I mean, we were something like 700% more than a year ago, and it continues to grow at that rate. So thank you very, very much. If you are listening on audio and haven't hit subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, it always helps if you do that. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. Haggy D tomorrow. We'll see you on Friday for the full-length show. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.